At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome to Lovey Las Vegas for Ghost Gossips with myself, Craigie Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast, and we've got a tremendous podcast for you as in segment number two, Eli Hershkovich. He does a great job with the Lions, also his own podcast, the Outside Shots Podcast. You're able to find that wherever you hear podcasts. He is going to be joining me. We're going to be taking a look at all the games that we're going to be getting on Friday. We did do this interview prior to us seeing the craziness that ensued in that overtime game of Michigan State versus Kansas State, but everything for Friday, we're going to be diving into that, what he all likes. He's one of the best at being able to dive into the advanced analytics, so that is going to be a fun chat in segment number two. In the final segment, we've got four Sweet 16 games, so I'm going to give you guys picks and analysis on all four of those as we hit some bank shots. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at unit_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter. As per usual, please just send these into the timeline. The other way, that's fine, an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Now, I did not get in any Twitter questions today, but we're going to recap what we all saw first at college basketball. I'll also give you guys a little bit of what we're seeing with regards to offseason news and notes, because this time of year is sort of transitionary with college basketball, because we're seeing a lot of guys enter in the transfer portal, some very notable names as well. We're seeing coaching hirings and firings, so for those of you nerdists of college basketball, much like myself, we're going to serve that. If you don't want to hear about that, fast forward to the interview with Eli. I'll have all the time markers and everything for you there. But let's give you a roundup as to everything that we saw in college basketball on Thursday, try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
Now, I am doing this as we are unsure of how Florida Atlantic versus Tennessee and Gonzaga versus UCLA went, because I have to do the Greg Peterson experience from 9 to midnight Pacific time, so I do need to pre-record this a little bit and a little bit of a brush up from yesterday as well. The top cover team in all of college basketball got it done once again. Utah Valley, 74-68 winners over Cincinnati for Utah Valley. They are 24-9 against the spread, and we'll be seeing them out in lovely Las Vegas this next week as well, as they have been a very fun team to watch in that game. Aziz Bendogo, he had 15 points, 12 rebounds, so it was nice to be able to see that. And in terms of the two games as I record that have one final in college basketball from Thursday, we got one epic one and we got one blowout. UConn was a blowout, 88-65. They just completely dump-trucked Arkansas in this one. And for UConn, 23-11-1 against the spread. They have been incredibly impressive with that regard. For Arkansas, they just got completely bludgeoned on the glass, losing that battle by a count of 43-31. For UConn, they actually lose their turnover battle 15-10, but Tristan Newton was hitting shots from the logo as UConn goes 9-20 from three-point range. Adama Sanogo, he makes things a go-go, 2 blocks, 18 points, 8 rebounds. Jordan Hawkins had 24 points, and for Arkansas, they go 5-16 from three-point range. They got just 3 points in this one from Devontae David. You had a 5 fouls and 0 points out of Kamani Johnson. So, not a great performance from Arkansas, but this was an all-timer. I mean, this is one of the greatest non-Final Four games that we've seen in NCAA tournament history, in my opinion. Kansas State behind Marquise Noel. He was hobbling all game long, and he overcame that with 20 points, 19 assists on 2 turnovers, as Kansas State wins 98-93 in overtime. Even with the ailments of Noel, Kansas State wins the turnover battle 13-5. Kansas State had 5 turnovers in 45 minutes. No doubt about it, Keontae Johnson was the beneficiary of a lot of those assists. He goes 10 of 18 from the floor. And Michigan State, they hit their threes. They went 13 of 25 from distance. You had Joey Hauser go off for 18 points, 6 rebounds. A.J. Hogard, 25 points, 6 assists. He had a nice effort. He also had 4 turnovers all by himself, while Kansas State had 5 as a collective. Ty Walker, 16 points. Some bad possessions towards the end of the game from him, though. And Kansas State, now 24-11 against the spread. They have been absolutely terrific with that regard. And if you are taking a look at college basketball and what we've been seeing over the last 7 days, this is across the NCAA tournament, NIT, so all these tournaments, we have been seeing a 60.6% rate to the under with 40 unders, 26 overs, and I believe what we've got 4 pushes, if my math is correct on that as well. And we have been seeing quite a few underdogs being able to rise up as well in these spots, as they're right around 33, 32, and 2 against the spread as I record, though that is going to be changing with the 2 other Sweet 16 games that are going to be accounted for, but that's what we're seeing right now in terms of those trends. And those 2 games that did wrap up, they both went over the total. And if you're taking a look at the offseason in college basketball, it certainly is getting very hot and heavy. I know that a lot of people have been asking where I track all these transfers at. Verbal Commits does really the best job of letting you know who is all in the transfer portal and who is all going to be jumping ship. And I'm going to be very curious to see where some of these guys are going to be going in the offseason. As first things first, with regards to a little bit of a coaching decision, it appears as though Matt Lottage, who is at Valparaiso, and I mean, let's just call it what it is, Valparaiso, ever since they went from the Rising Lake to the Missouri Valley, they have not gotten the job done. He has been relieved of his duties. Valparaiso this last year went 11-15, and after going 20-4-9 in season number 1, it has been 6 straight years of fewer than 20 wins for Valparaiso, so that has been relatively rough. You wish him nothing but the best, but I do think that the decision had to be made. But in terms of the transfer portal, Luther Muhammad, a former top 100 recruit from the 2018 recruiting cycle by ESPN, he's on the transfer portal. Career low, 3.5 points per game this last season at Arizona State, but was a 2-year starter at Ohio State, so I think that he is going to be a name that is going to be of intrigue. Silas Mason, a former top 400 recruit of UNC Asheville, he has decided that he is going to be entering in the transfer portal, just could never really find his footing over with UNC Asheville. You also saw Justin Stevens, he was just riding the bench quite a bit. He decided that he was going to be entering into the transfer portal as well. You saw Ebenezer Duwana, who was playing at NC State this last season, and he was a starter 2 years ago. Last year, he just fell out of favor. He was more of a defense-oriented big man, was able to give the team about 1.7 blocks per game 2 seasons ago. He is now in the transfer portal. Very interesting to see where Arkansas Pine Bluffs AC Curry goes, as he was able to have a relatively solid year this last year. He was able to give the team 4 boards, was a top 100 junior college transfer from the past season as well. He decided that he was going to be entering into the transfer portal. Ethan Anderson, he was a part of the Wyoming trio that came in from the Pac-12 and did not last the season. He's already found his new landing spot in Pepperdine, where Pepperdine always welcomes scoring. They don't necessarily welcome a lot of defense. He's a native of Los Angeles, California, so he's going back home. 2 seasons ago for USC, he was able to do a nice job of doling out the ball. As a matter of fact, his best year probably came as a freshman, 2019-20 season, where he was able to dole out 4.2 assists per game. It's a career 35.5% three-point shooter, so that should be big for a Pepperdine team that you could probably use a little bit more defense, and this can't be a downgrade for them, because you really can't downgrade from what they've been having. Ben Middlebrooks, he was a relatively solid low post defender for Clemson, about 3.3 boards this last season. He is in the transfer portal as well. And then we're going to be seeing some up transfers like a Dalton Necht. He was the top scorer this last season over at Northern Colorado. Was able to put in there 20.7 boards as an all-Big Sky performer. I believe that he began his career at the junior college level, was able to shoot 38% from three-point range on a team that just didn't provide a lot of support in general. So we shall see where he's going to be going. Aaron Delaney, he's a 2-time All-America East 6th Man of the Year award winner. He is now in the transfer portal. He this last season for a Vermont team that made the NCAA tournament, shot 40% from 3, right around 11.5 points per game. I do like his overall game, so he has decided that he is going to be entering into the transfer portal. Josiah Alec, He was part of that New Mexico team that they just went completely down the tubes towards the end of the season after having a really good start to the season. He averaged 8.5 points, 7.5 boards. Did see quite a bit of a drop-off from his previous offensive output at UMKC 2 seasons ago during the 2020-21 season. Shot 35.5% from three with 15 points per game as a 6'8", little bit of a combo player. So he's able to play offense. He's able to play defense. He is now in the transfer portal as well. We're already seeing some guys decide on places where they're already going to be going as well, like Keon Burns has decided that he is going to be going to Maine, and a lot of these teams that they are able to grab these guys early typically are beneficiaries of it. Like with Burns, he was a starter at Long Island this last year, 7.5 points, 5 boards, shot 35.5% from 3 as a 6-5 combo player. That's a nice get for Maine. Frank Staney, that's a good one for Stone Cold Steven F. Austin. He was one of the top 3-point shooters in the WAC this last season playing over at Utah Tech. He was able to give the team 7.5 points, shot about 34% from 3-point range, which was a little bit of a fall off from the beginning part of the season, but still able to be a nice 6'6", little bit of a combo player. I think that he's going to fit in well with Steven F. Austin staying within the conference, so he knows exactly how it goes. Devin Caesar, he was playing at Buffalo this last season. He has decided that he is going to be heading over to Old Dominion, so that is going to be a good get for them as well. And then we did see someone like an A.J. Plyswit, who he missed the entire 2021-22 season, came back relatively strong this last season. He has decided that he is going to be testing out the transfer portal as he averaged during the 2020-21 season a blistering 19 points per game on 43.5% three-point shooting. Still shot this past year, 88% the free throw line, 41.5% for three, but only about 12 points per game. He was coming off of that just debilitating injury, so we shall see how things go there. You're seeing already the effect of Rick Pitino as Omar Stanley decided that he was going to be entering the transfer portal. He was at St. John's this last season and just really wasn't necessarily the world's greatest fit. He was sort of a part-time starter with the team. 4.5 points, right around 3 boards per contest, and he did put up some numbers towards the end part of the season as well. Take a look at his last 7 games. He did put some good tape out there as he shot 55% from 3 in that time span. Obviously, small sample size, but was able to give the team right around 3 boards, 7.5 points in that time span. So we shall see where he goes. The boogeyman, John Bugs III, 10.5 points, nearly 40% 3-point shooting this last season while he was over at UTSA. Meet me for the Roadrunners. He is in the transfer portal. And then these guys are relatively good scorers. Akeem Hart along Quincy Oliveri. Oliveri this last year was playing over at Rice. We give our Odelane Giffen go Owls, but he was a very solid contributor with 18.5 points, 6 boards, started 35 games while shooting 36.5% from 3-point range, chipped in there a steal per game as well. He is in the transfer portal, and Akeem Hart, he was a part of that team in Maryland that made the NCAA tournament, and we're seeing more and more these teams that made a postseason tournament but got knocked out. Now these guys are starting to make their decisions as to whether or not to enter in the transfer portal. Hart, a full-time starter this past season, 11.5 points, 4 boards, 2.5 assists, shot about 33% from 3-point range. Very versatile 6'6" player. There's going to be a lot of teams that would absolutely love to have him on the roster. And then you've got someone like a Lazar Stefanovic, who last season he was playing over with Utah, was a solid player with 10 points, 3 boards, 2.5 assists, 6'7", do-it-all sort of player that shot 36% from 3-point range. He is going to be in the transfer portal. Shamar Bogues, who was able to average 9.5 points a steal per contest at Tarleton State, he's going to be in the transfer portal. And then there are just some guys that they were not necessarily great fits with the places that they went that they're looking for a new lease on life. Like, we're going to be seeing it with Joe Besmele. He was playing over at George Washington 2 seasons ago. This last year he was at Oklahoma, and he did not find his form at Oklahoma. Averaged 4 points per game after the season before at George Washington. 16.5 points, 5 boards, a block per game while shooting 35% from 3-point range. Just clearly was not able to get things going, so there was that. We saw 5 different players from Colorado enter into the transfer portal. Nique Clifford was really the most notable of them as he was able to give the team right around 6-7 points per game this last year. We saw a lot of guys like a Greg Gerhard, who was at the end of the bench. He decided that he was going to be entering the transfer portal. Quincy Allen, a top 100 recruit that just has never been able to get it going. He's been dealing with injuries. He decided that he was going to be entering in the transfer portal as well. We saw George Mason and their coach in Kim English decide that he was going to be taking the Providence job. So that means that we're seeing quite a few George Mason players decide whether or not not they're going to be entering the transfer portal, and some of them jump ship right away, like Ronald Polite III. With Polite III, he was really one of the main facilitators for the team this last season. 11.5 points, 3 boards, 4 assists, was able to shoot 36.5% from 3-point range, and we're just going to be seeing more and more of that as things go along. And also, you had Justin Fernandez, who didn't play a ton this last season, but he was able to step up towards the back half of the season with 13 starts, averaging about 4 points per contest. He decided that he was going to be entering into the transfer portal, and then you did see someone like Desmond Watson decide to enter into the portal as well, about 9 to 10 points per game at Davidson this last year alone. Steve Settle III, he's going to be looking to be an up transfer as well. You're going to notice a lot of these teams that they were 15, 16 seeds in the NCAA tournament. A lot of these guys are trying to show what they're truly worth and trying to see, all right, am I able to get in on a bigger school or not with Settle? This was actually his lowest output in terms of scoring this last year with 11.1 points, right around 5.5 boards, but chipped in their steal, was able to shoot 30% from three as a 6'10", just do-it-all combo player. And then we've also seen a few guys enter into the NBA draft as well, like Jet Howard. He was averaging 14.5 points, shot just under 40% from 3-point range at Michigan. He has decided that he is going to be entering in the draft. Taylor Hendricks, he was very versatile over at Central Florida this last year at 6'9", north of 14 points, about 7 boards, shot in the high 30s from 3-point range. He decided that he was going to be entering in the NBA draft as well. Some of these more notable guys are declaring right now. These are certainly guys that are going to be saying in, like, I'd be very, very surprised if Taylor Hendricks pulls out. Someone like a Jet Howard, I think, is going to be there for good as well, whereas more of these guys are going to be entering after the NCAA tournament, entering more in April, early May. These are probably the guys that have the bigger decisions. So that's what we're seeing college basketball on the news front, and that's what we all got in college basketball, both in regards to news and on the court on Thursday. Now coming up next, let's take a look at what we're getting on Friday in the NCAA tournament. Eli Hershkovich, he does a great job breaking things down at the lines, does amazing work as well over with his own podcast, the Outside Shots podcast. He joins me next to break down these games right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Apes Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their NBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Good Scott Soup with myself, Greg H. Peters, and now part of the BC Family Podcast. And it is always great to have this man aboard. Eli Hershkovich is doing a great job over there at the Lions, taking a look at a little bit of everything. I know that he, much like myself, is getting set for what is going to be a great baseball season. He, much like myself, loves football as well, but he, much like myself, knows that this is primetime college basketball season, and it is going to be an absolutely tremendous run the next few days up to the Final Four. And then once we get the Final Four, hopefully we get some very high-level games to be able to decide who the champion is. He does a great job as the host of the Outside Shots podcast. You're able to find that wherever you get your podcast, much like this one. And to be able to follow Eli Hershkovich over on Twitter, that is just at his name. Eli Hershkovich, last name is spelled H-E-R-S-H-K-O-V-I-C-H. And Eli, always great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, Greg, pumped to talk about these Friday Sweet 16 games. Just had Jay Billis on my last podcast. Check it out on the Lines podcast feed. A lot of fun. And like you said, it's a hectic March, to say the least. I feel like I've gotten a combined, over the last 4 or 5 days, something like 10 hours of sleep. I don't know what it is. It's not like it's the energy kind of thing. It's more so just you're working, you know, till midnight, post midnight, and then you're waking up super early to get back at it. So it's a grind, but excited to get to these games.
Oh, absolutely. I'm right there with you. We will sleep when we are dead, Eli. But with that said, there is no sleep when it comes to making money. And I know that we both have been able to do quite a bit of that here in the NCAA tournament. And when it comes to the Sweet 16 games that we're going to be seeing on Friday, there are quite a few of fascination. But I take a look at this Texas versus Xavier game, and it really does stand out to me, because with Xavier, I almost feel like they're just a little bit lucky to be here, because they very nearly lose to Kennesaw State in that first round game. And now they're up against it, going up against a Texas team that I feel like they're really hitting their stride. I know that you've got a little bit of a future out on Texas right now with the Longhorns. They're between a 4 and 4.5 point favorite. How do you view this game? Because I feel like with the Longhorns, they sort of got away from their identity a little bit, which in my opinion was playing good hard-nosed defense. And here in the month of March, really with that run in the Big 12 tournament, I feel like they've gotten that back and then some.
Yeah, it's been sparked by Dylan Dessou putting up over 20 points, just about 10 rebounds a game in Texas's first two tournament games. So you mentioned how I have that Texas future. See, I actually view this game a little bit differently, and it doesn't mean that I'm taking Xavier against the spread or on the money line, but I do think Texas is a little bit fortunate to be here, because you look at some of the defensive luck they got, especially against Penn State. I don't necessarily put too much stock into the Colgate result in terms of their Raiders missing their fair share of threes, just because they were up against it physicality-wise. You know, athleticism, Texas had the major advantage, and then some going up against the Patriot League team. But Penn State, obviously one of the more well-coached teams in the country. Now Micah Shrewsbury over to Notre Dame, but last Saturday he was still at Penn State, and the Nittany Lions shot 8 of 28 from behind the arc. Now, I know I got some feedback on Twitter, to say the least, with some bettors and probably Texas fans saying, well, Texas shot 3 of 13 from deep. Texas also is bottom 60, bottom 70 in the country in terms of three-point attempt rate. Penn State is second in college basketball when it comes to three-point scoring rate. And 8 of 28, when they had the amount of open looks they had, especially Dredd and Funk, I think missed a combined three open threes down the stretch over the final 2 or 3 minutes of that game. So you carry over that into this game. And Xavier doesn't take a ton of threes either, kind of similar to Texas. So you might be asking, your listener might be asking, well, then why are you maybe considering or at least a little bit nervous about your Texas future? Because Xavier is one of the most well-coached teams offensively in the country. Sean Miller, one of the best offensive minds over the last couple decades across college basketball. So Xavier has their fair share of three-point shooting too. I know they don't take a lot of threes, but you have Solly Boom, the UTEP transfer, played at San Francisco as well. he and Jack Nungy have combined something like 2 of 16 from beyond the arc in their first two tourney games. So that kind of plays into their lack of success against Kennesaw State when that team is really off from three. If Miller revolves his game plan around taking advantage of the Longhorns' no-middle defense, which in general, no-middle defenses are meant to cut off dribble penetration and maybe not giving up more open threes, but you're giving up better looks from that category. So if Xavier revolves their game plan, if Miller revolves his attack around attacking the three-point line, essentially at that end of the floor, even though their defense is still susceptible, despite a little bit of an improvement without Zach Fremantle in the lineup, I think Xavier has a shot to at least cover or potentially bring this total over, whichever way you want to attack it.
Yeah, boy, Xavier, their offense has been there all season long. There's no question about it with Xavier. The bigger concern with them has been the defense has been a little bit lackluster throughout the season. For Texas, was a little bit of a concern throughout Big 12 season, but feels like they've been able to hit their peak a bit more. But to your point, I've been taking a look at their shot quality numbers here in the NCAA tournament, and there has been a bit of luck that has went their way as well. As joining me on the podcast, we do have Eli Hershkovich. He does a great job over at the Lions. And when it comes to Cinderella, the top seed remaining in the NCAA tournament, Princeton, I honestly don't think that they match up terribly with Creighton. Creighton is a 10-point favorite, and if Princeton becomes the second straight 15 seed to make the Elite Eight, I think that that would be a little bit of a shocker. But I take a look at this line at 10, and I don't think that there's necessarily the world's worst value with Princeton, because I feel like they do a good job on glass. And Creighton, if I've got one issue with them, it is that they don't necessarily have a deep team. I don't know how you view this game. I like the way that Creighton has played whenever Ryan Kalkbrenner has been out there on the floor, because I do think that it's very important to have a little bit of an asterisk around the overall season numbers of Creighton, because quite a few of those games that do drag them down a little bit, they were when Kalkbrenner was dealing with that injury, was dealing with that illness in December. But even with that, I feel like Princeton has been able to do a relatively solid job of playing together, doing a good job of just taking care of the little things. And I think they've got a chance to be able to cover 10.
Yeah, I don't have a strong take on this game, Greg. If you go back to the Mizzou game, obviously the Arizona game in the first round, a monster 215 upset, and Princeton didn't shoot well. Neither did Arizona outside of Tabellus, kind of no-show down the stretch. I don't know if that's more on Tommy Lloyd or Tabellus for not demanding the ball in the final 2-3 minutes when Arizona blew a 2-possession lead at the under 5 timeout, or under 4 timeout, I think it was. But 10 seems a little hefty, but at the same time, if Creighton's shooting like they did against Baylor, similar though to Xavier matching up against Texas, Baylor runs that no middle defense, which played right into the hands of Creighton when they are hot from three. McDermott does a great job of getting this team wide open looks. Creighton, not the most consistent 3-point shooting team. I know they're top 85 in 3-point efficiency, but still not the most consistent 3-point shooting team, especially in the latter part of Big East play, at least in comparison to the elite offenses that McDermott has had over the last decade. So 10 seems like it may be a little much based on the number itself. If Princeton is able to operate efficiently and like you said, on the glass, if they're able to at least control the pace for maybe 30 of the 40 minutes, three quarters of the game, and slow things down, considering the Blue Jays want to speed it up with Nembhard in transition, who had a big game against Baylor, and Shireman, who's yet to get going in the tournament, but can obviously heat it up. I mean, the range that guy has from about just a little bit inside half court, and then obviously beyond that, is incredible to watch. He hasn't put it together performance-wise, scoring-wise in the dance, but I don't really have a big take on this game in terms of a bet. It's a stay away from me.
I cannot blame you there, as it's very rare which we get a 215 or we get a 615 matchup in the NCAA tournament, but you know what? That is college basketball in the year 2023, my friend, as it has been wild, it has been crazy, and we've got two remaining one seeds in the NCAA tournament. Both are going to be on the floor on Friday, and both pretty much the same amount of points that they are favored by. Houston against Miami and San Diego State versus Alabama, as we do this right now, are both lines of 7.5. They could move around a little bit overnight, but we're seeing both of these teams as relatively the same. When it comes to Alabama and Houston, which team do you feel like might be a little bit more vulnerable on Friday, because I take a look at Miami and I love their offense, but I have serious question marks with their defense. I recognize Houston injury concerns, but I felt like they did a good job of putting those aside against Auburn. Meanwhile, with San Diego State, the fact that they did play as fast as they did in the non-conference portion of the season, the fact that they went through the Maui Invitational, playing at a little bit more of an up-tempo style, they've gone back to their roots ever since then. But I do feel like the fact that they did get some reps in, playing against more up-tempo teams, the fact that they were able to speed themselves up, I didn't like it at the time, but I think it might pay dividends in this spot against Alabama.
Yeah, I'm with you. Of the two dogs, I think San Diego State is not only live to cover, but potentially win this game outright. Not that this is being avoided or not discussed as much, because it has popped up throughout the week, and especially last week with Miller going scoreless, Brandon Miller, the five-star freshman for Alabama in their first-round game. But considering the groin is still seemingly an issue, I know he's tried to downplay it, and so has Nate Oates throughout the week, but you couple that with, like you said, one of the most physical defenses in college basketball, the fifth-rated adjusted defensive efficiency in the country, Alabama with a bottom, let's say, 120, 130 turnover percentage. Sears and Quinterly can both have their fair share of turnover issues. And San Diego State can pressure the ball, obviously. Darian Trammell, one of the better on-ball defenders, not just among mid-major programs. And you have Trammell and Matt Bradley, who can really light it up. Bradley is shooting about 35% from three on the season, but I would still consider him Jekyll and Hyde. Now, Trammell is the definition of Jekyll and Hyde from three at 30%. So is Lamont Butler, too, and he could get it going. But I think this boils down to more defense, right? If you're betting San Diego State, you may want to consider correlating it with the under, because if their defense comes to play, Alabama is a top five defense as well, per KenPom ratings and just per my own ratings and per a bunch of other advanced metrics. So if this game does boil down to a low scoring game, and considering San Diego State, like you said, they played a little more up tempo in the Mountain West tournament, but they played a slower pace overall than Alabama, which makes this game a little bit more high variance in theory, especially because even though San Diego State doesn't shoot a ton of threes, they're, I think, bottom 100 across college basketball on three-point attempt rate. I do think if you're Brian Dutcher, now granted he may not decide to do this, but I think you, just by nature of being a three-possession dog, not that that's going directly into his mindset, but unless the pace works out to perfection and unless San Diego State's defense really, really dictates the tempo and controls things overall in this game where the way San Diego plays it offensively doesn't matter, I think you kind of have to be three-point oriented against another high-variance team in Alabama that is also kind of Jekyll and Hyde, but in a wrong direction to me, because you think about the way they're priced into the market, it's similar to Purdue, and I know that might open some eyes a little bit and get some criticism, but just from the standpoint of Purdue being one of the favorites to win it all entering the tournament, yet outside of Zach Edey, you're relying on a young team that shoots a lot of threes. And you can make the same case for Alabama, even though they're better defensively. It may be the case that San Diego State's defense truly dictates the way this thing goes, and it doesn't need to rely on three-point shooting, especially if Alabama is off from three. But again, there are a lot of different ways to play this game, and I think a look towards either the under San Diego State or potentially correlating the two is the way to go.
I think this game is so fascinating between San Diego State and Alabama, because when I take a look at Alabama, and joining me on the podcast, we do have Eli Hershkovich, who does great work over at the Lions. They've been one of the top three-point shooting defenses in all of college basketball, and we're doing this as we do not know the result of Tennessee versus Florida Atlantic, since that was a late game that we saw from MSG on Thursday. But I mean, these are two of the best three-point shooting defenses in all of college basketball. And when you do see metrics like that with Alabama, with Tennessee being such good three-point shooting defenses, but as we know in the SEC, there's not a lot of jump shooting in general. How much do you look into that? Because I do think that, no doubt about it, both of these teams, they do a great job of guarding the arc. I also do have to put a little bit of credence into the fact that they were playing against teams that just don't knock down threes, I do need to put a little bit of an asterisk due to the fact that that probably bumped up their defensive numbers a little bit. And I think that that's one of the trickiest parts of the tournament, determining what was just a little bit of a booster to them based on the conference they played and how hard-nosed that defense truly is.
And again, you can look at that one of two ways in terms of the opponent's three-point shooting. It definitely goes into the notion that both teams are very physical and they're great defensively overall. But Alabama, just looking at them in particular, plays drop coverage with Bediako and Clowney, which means you're going to give up more open threes. And Alabama ranks below average and then some across the SEC in terms of open three-point rate allowed. Yet, like you said, they gave up overall in the season the third lowest three-point shooting clip, and it was the lowest in terms of their SEC opponents at 26.5%. So, like I said with San Diego State, overall, can you trust them to hit threes in this game? Considering the way the Mountain West has performed overall, not only in this tournament, but in previous tournaments, Aztecs rank slightly below average in three-point shooting at 34% on the season. Bradley, is he trustworthy? Tramell, Butler, the same go for them, but maybe a little bit more of a concern there. Parrish gives you a bit more. You could rely a little bit more on him off the bench, the Oakland transfer. But just because Alabama plays drop coverage and because regression should, in theory, be coming to that shooting clip that they're allowing, not only in conference, but overall this season, that's why you have to give a look towards San Diego State, not just because of their elite defense, but because of the way Alabama sets up at the other end of the floor.
Yep, it is something that I struggle with every single year with the NCAA tournament, trying to figure out, okay, what was based on the competition that they played? And what is them just truly being terrific on defense? And I'm right there with you. I do think that Alabama's gotten a tad bit lucky on the defensive side of things, going up against teams like Mississippi State. They are 363rd out of 363 D1 teams in three-point shooting percentage. That always helps out your numbers. And what always helps me out, Eli, is getting you on this podcast, because you do tremendous work over at the Lions. You've been doing a great job all season long, taking a look at this wonderful game of college basketball. I know that you, much like myself, in a few weeks, you're probably going to be in full baseball mode, taking a look at all those great games, as well as when one season ends, another begins. You do it all, my friends. Let the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, check out thelines.com. Check out the Lines podcast. Just search the Lines on Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite podcast. Check out some of the March Madness stuff I've done, and I'll have up a new podcast this morning if you're listening to it, assuming early Friday morning will be up sometime Friday afternoon. So hope you're enjoying all the great work that Greg does covering college hoops. He's been doing it for a while. Greg and I have known each other for quite a while. And one last quick point I want to make, Greg, because it was on my mind, but then San Diego State, Alabama dominated the conversation. I'm also with you on Houston, Miami, not necessarily betting on Houston, but just from the notion that Miami is a little overvalued at this point. They retrieved 51% of their misses against Indiana in that round of 32 game. Now, I know Omer and this 4-out-1-in Miami attack are a little underrated on the defensive glass, and especially on the offensive glass, like we saw against Miami. And Houston isn't as elite in terms of the defensive glass as they are at creating their own second chance shots. But I don't see it going the same way. And like you said, Houston really picked it up. Plus, you're getting nearly a week of rest for Sasser and Shedd. So I think the numbers and just, again, natural dominance in terms of the way Houston is constructed with its front court and with its gang rebounding prowess definitely favors the Cougars.
I'm right there with you. I do like the way that Houston comes into this game. Line at 7.5, starting to get a little bit lofty for me, but I do think that out of the one seeds, Alabama does have a little bit more vulnerability in this spot, and I know that Friday's action is going to be tremendous, leading up to a great Elite Eight. Eli is going to be following it all over there at the Lions, and every single time he joins this podcast, lends tremendous insights, much like he did today. A big thanks to Eli Hershkovich for joining me on Coast to Coast. He's now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast, and coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on all four of these Sweet 16 games for Friday as we hit some bank shots.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Ghost Guest Seats with myself, Greg H. Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Great to be able to get Eli Hershkovich aboard. He does a great job over at the lines, thelines.com, along with his own podcast, the Outside Shots Podcast, which you're able to find wherever your podcast has been doing a nice job getting all dialed in with everything that we're seeing in college basketball. I know that one of his guests recently was a friend of ours, Justin Berry, along with Jay Billis. So he does absolutely amazing work. A must follow at Eli Hershkovich. That podcast coupled with this one, that always gets you set for a great day of betting. So a big thanks to Eli for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis for all four of the Sweet 16 games for this College Basketball Friday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at @unit_D1. We're going to be going with the two games that are going to be going down in the state of Missouri and Kansas City. And then we're going to go to the two games in Louisville, Kentucky. These are both going to be in time order. So the early game in Missouri is first, and then the late game. And then the early game is going to be going down at the KFC Yum Center is up first. And then we go with the late game after that. So that'll keep things nice, clean, and easy. And we get things started with the one seed, 643-644 on the betting board. It is Miami, and they're going to be playing against Houston. Houston is a favorite of between 7 and 7.5 points, with your total anywhere between 138 and 138.5. 7 is a max I'm willing to lay with Houston. I did make them a 7.5-point favorite. And personally, I was taking a look at this a little bit earlier on in the week because we have seen quite a bit of line movement here. This is a number that got down as far as 6.5 in some places. So if you're still looking to dive in and if you're still able to get a 7, that is something that I would be entertaining. At 7.5, I'd be waiting to see where this moves. If you get to an 8 or greater than that, it would be a take for me at Miami. If you get back down to a 7, it's a take on Houston. Houston has been able to just do an amazing job with their defense all season long, and let's call it what it is. For Miami, it has been relatively rough, as one thing that Houston is going to be able to take away is three-point shooting, because Houston overall this season, number 2 in the country in opponent three-point shooting percentage. But I will say this for Miami, opponents are shooting right around 31.3% from three-point range in a road-slash-neutral court environment, so they've actually been significantly better with their defense when they have been away from home, because I need to look at the raw numbers and they just don't add up. Houston, number 2 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Miami is 181st, but Miami is giving up 3.5 points fewer per 100 possessions when they're away from home. But also with this Houston team, what goes under the radar, because we always talk about their defense, it's a top 15 offense in terms of points scored on a per possession basis as well. And we had our question marks with Houston with all the injuries, but Marcus Sasser and Jamal Shedd look solid in their round of 32 game, and now these guys had nearly a week off, so I don't think that Houston is going to be too hobbled in this game. Marcus Sasser is able to give you 17 points, 3 assists, shoots about 39% from 3-point range. Now, I actually do think that Nochad Omier is going to do an okay job on the glass. Does he win the battle? No. You got Jairus Walker along Juwan Roberts. These two guys have been able to combine for 14.5 rebounds per game, about 21.5 points between the two of them. Walker shoots 34.5% from 3, and what I think is key for Miami is that they need to tap into what was so successful for them last season, because last season with Miami, what they were able to do was able to generate steals. They were one of the best teams in all of college basketball being able to win the turnover battle. This year, Miami has done a solid job of taking care of the ball, 11.3 turnovers per game, but they're down to generating about 7.3 steals per contest, and Houston is the team that is a little bit of a better ball hawking team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. You've got a Houston squad that ranks in the top 35 nationally. They are 33rd in the country with this regard. Meanwhile, you've got a Miami bunch that they're just not up to snuff this year, although they do have a lot of returning pieces from last year's backcourt in Isaiah Wong along Jordan Miller. These two guys have been able to combine for 31.2 points. What did stand out to me was that both of these guys were off in their game against Drake, and they still were able to survive in advance. They're combining for about 6 assists per game, and you've got Miller shooting 35% from 3, 38.5% from distance for Isaiah Wong. But, I mean, with that, they are right around 170th in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, and that's just not cutting it. They have been able to get some nice contributions recently, though, out of a guy with a very fascinating name, and Wuga Poplar, the 6'5", little bit of a combo player overall for the season, is averaging in that neighborhood about 8.5 points per game, so he's been able to do an okay job with that aspect. But take a look, since the beginning of the month of February, he's shooting 48.5% from 3 while taking 3.3 threes per contest. He's been able to average about 10.5 points per game in this respect as well, so I do like the way that he's been able to perform, and it's been very interesting with this Miami team because they have just been a rocket ship with regards to their offense. They have gotten to at least 74 points in, I believe now, all but one of their games ever since the beginning of the month of February, so they've been very consistent with that regard. Meanwhile, you do have a Houston team that they've been able to do a nice job being able to put the biscuit in the basket all season long. Down the stretch, it's been a little bit more rough, fewer than 70 points so far in their last 5 games, but I do think that that game against Auburn was able to ignite them, and I do think that Miami is going to be able to find a way to get some points, but I do think that in the end, Houston is going to do a good job of thrashing a Miami defense that they've been better here in the NCAA tournament. But that said, you take a look at the form that they were in coming into the NCAA tournament, and I do think that Drake, they just had a really bad performance coming into the NCAA tournament. In their previous 9 games, they had given up at least 70 points in 7 of them. I do think that Houston is going to be able to gash them. I do think that all of your players are healthy for Houston. I think that Jamal Shedd, who's been able to give you about 5.5 assists to 2 turnovers per game, is going to do a nice job of running a clean show for Houston, which will allow for a bunch of easy buckets. So I did set my total here at a 140.5. I'm going to be willing to go over. I do think that this game is going to be close enough for late game fouling with Houston. 1 to lay up to 7 with them, 8 or more. That is my take point. line on Miami. I personally took a 6.5 with Houston. 645, 646 on the betting board. It is Texas, and they're going to be playing against Xavier out there in the state of Missouri. Texas, anywhere between a 4 to a 4.5 point favorite. Your total's anywhere between 149 and 149.5. Seeing one stray 148.5 out there as well, and that would be my buy point on the over. I set my total at a 149 and a 149 exactly. Personally, this is going to be a total that I take a look at a little bit more in the AM. I would much rather have a 148.5 over rather than a 149.5 under, personally. So I'm going to be waiting to see how this marinates, because with Texas, they've really done a nice job of batting down the hatches with their defense recently. This defense, they were just out of sorts after Chris Beard got let go. They had to make the transition to Rodney Terry. You take a look at the way that this defense has been able to perform down the stretch, though, and it has really been second to none. They have allowed now 66 points or fewer in each out of their last six games. It is a Texas team that they play with some tempo. They're in the top 75 in terms of total possessions per game, and it is a Xavier team that we all know that this team is going to be looking to run it and gun it, and if there is an advantage for Xavier, it is on the glass. They are 15th in the country overall in terms of rebound rate in a roadside shooter court environment that has been able to translate. Meanwhile, you've got a Texas team that has one guy that's able to give you north of 5 rebounds per game. That would be Timmy Allen, so that is a little bit of an issue because Texas won our 90th in the country in terms of rebound rate. But that said, this is a Xavier team that they can be a little bit hit or miss with regards to their offense as well. In roadside shooter court games, they have scored 72 points or fewer and now 5 out of their last 10. And the Xavier team, they're in the top 40 nationally in terms of total possessions per game. You've got Soleil Boom, you've got Kobe Jones being able to provide a combined 31.5 points, a little bit over 11 boards, with Jones shooting 38.3% from three. Soleil Boom has been able to bring the boom, shooting about 41% from three-point range, and they both give you 4.3 assists per game. With Xavier, 12.5 turnovers per game. With their tempo, that's not too bad, but for Texas, this team has been even more efficient with having two guys in Serge Ibaka Rice, coupled with Marcus Carr, really being able to lead the charge. You've got Carr, who has really been the top scorer for this team, being able to supply 16 points, 4 assists, 1.7 steals per game, but Serge Ibaka Rice has really been the X factor down the stretch because he's been able to give the team 12-plus points in now 10 out of the team's last 12 games, and you take a look at him ever since, we're going to call it the end of January, since January 28th, that game against Tennessee, he has been just so integral to this team's turnaround in this time span of a grand total of 16 games, most of which he came off the bench for. Shot 40.2% from three, 4 boards, a steal, 16.4 points per game while being a great on-ball defender. And then you've got Dylan Dessou, someone who I know was pointed out by our good friend Eli Hershkovich. He's been able to do a nice job down the stretch as well, as he has supplied at least 15 points and 6 rebounds in each of the team's last 4 games. It's a big reason why they were able to win the Big 12 tournament. It's a big reason why they've been able to really do a nice job in their first 2 NCAA tournament games as well. He is providing a lot down low, and for Xavier, just not a lot of depth with this team, with Zach Fremantle being out of the fold. Now Jerome Hunter, ever since he got elevated into the starting lineup, has been able to supply you with about 6 rebounds per game, so that helps out. Jack Dunn, who's able to give you 14 points, 7 boards, and he shoots 40% from 3. All in all, it is a Xavier team that they shoot about 39.5% from 3, but in a roadside shooter court environment, they shoot over 40% from 3-point range. They're either number 1 or number 2 in the country in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage when they're away from home. They also do give up the 3, though, as well. Xavier, 270th in the country in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. Meanwhile, you've got a Texas team that they are 79th in the country in opponent's 3-point shooting percentage at 32.3%. I think that they're going to be able to hold up against Xavier. The Texas defense has been improving as things have been going along. I certainly think that they give up more than 66 in this spot, which is why I did sell my total at 149. Like I said, I personally would rather have a 148.5 over rather than a 149.5 under, because you do have the possibility of late game fouling. So we shall see where this line goes in the AM. But right now, my lead is to the 148.5 over. But if we get to like 150 plus, which I do think that we're probably going to get, that'd be my buy point on the under. But with Texas, did set them as a 5-point favorite, secure at 4 to 4.5, willing to lay it with Texas. Now we go to my DK Nation write-up. 647, 648 on the board. Alabama is going to be playing against San Diego State. This is from the KFC Yum Center out there in Louisville, Kentucky. Alabama's a 7.5-point favorite. Your total in between 136.5 and 137.5. My write-up here is going to be taking the points with San Diego State. I said San Diego State as an underdog of 5.5 points. San Diego State is a little bit more equipped to being able to handle Alabama because they were playing up-tempo to begin the season. As a matter of fact, on December 19th, after San Diego State's, I believe it was first 12 games, They were in the top 65 nationally in terms of total possessions per game. They're with Iowa and Memphis. They were playing at that sort of a tempo. They really throttled things down when it came to conference play, but they're able to match what Alabama does well. Alabama, their lifeblood on offense is taking threes. They are eighth in the country in terms of percentage of field goal attempts that come from three-point range. And these two teams, they both do a dominant job of being able to shut down the three-point arc. Alabama, third in the country in opponent's three-point shooting percentage. San Diego State, fourth in the country, but San Diego State, they don't rely as much on the three. They're more around 260th in the country in terms of percentage of shots that come from three-point range. And you've got a San Diego State team that does a good job of rebounding by committee. They're in the top 30 nationally in terms of rebound rate. Three separate guys do give you at least five rebounds per game, as Nathan Mensa, Jaden Ladie, and Keshawn Johnson are all in that fold, as all these guys, they give you between 6.1 and 8 points per game. They're not necessarily dominant scorers, and you really only have one guy for San Diego State that gives you north of 10 points per game. That'd be Matt Bradley, 4 boards, 13 points, shoots about 36% from 3, but just good overall balance for San Diego State. And San Diego State comes in really good form with their defense. They have given up 61 points or fewer in each out of their last 6 games. I mean, they have not allowed more than 61 points all month long. And for Alabama, you've got to wonder how much of their 3-point shooting percentage numbers were propped up by the fact that they went up against an SEC that, out of the bottom 65 3-point shooting teams in all of college basketball, they host 6 of them. Now, Brandon Miller, he's going to be able to get his 19 points, 8 boards. He shoots 39.5% for 3. He's terrific. Noah Clowney has been able to give you 10 points, 8 boards. And we saw the depth of Alabama in that round 1 game against Texas A&M. Corpus Christi, if needed, they were able to go 9 or 10 deep, with even guys like a Noah Gurley being able to give you some good minutes. I think in that game, you had like Nick Pringle against Texas A&M. Corpus Christi go out for a 19 and 15 performance. And San Diego State doesn't quite have that front-end talent, but someone like a Mike Parrish is able to drain about 37% of his threes. And I do think that Alabama is going to have its hands full in this spot. They like to play fast, but that also means that they get loose with the ball. They're about 249th in the country in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis when they're away from home overall for the season. Turning the ball over 14 times per game, Javon Quinterly, Jaden Bradley, they combine for about 6.7 assists per game. But I think San Diego State is fully equipped to be able to handle this Alabama team. They've been playing some of the best defense in all of college basketball. They're ranked in the top 15 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Alabama in the top 10 with this regard, but once again, how much did that SEC 3-point shooting play a factor into that? And I do think that overall, the best form in this tournament is really the San Diego State defense. So my write-up here is going to be San Diego State getting the points. Now, interestingly, I am going to be taking a look at the over, because something that I did mention as well, San Diego State, they're used to playing up-tempo. I do think that they're going to be willing to run with Alabama, and I think that they're going to be equipped to being able to handle the Alabama up-tempo style, and it's an Alabama team has gotten to at least 72 points in each of their last 5 games. And San Diego State bringing in some like Darian Trammell, that's able to give you 9.5 points per game. At his previous stop in Seattle, he was averaging more like 17 points per game. These guys are able to put up buckets as well, and you always have the fear of late game fouling as well. So I'm going to be willing to go with the over, and my write up here is going to be taking 7.5 points with San Diego State. And we wrap things up with 649, 650 on the betting board. It is Creighton playing against Princeton out there in Kentucky. Creighton, a 10-point favorite. Your total is anywhere between 140 and 141. This up my total 136.5. I'm going to be going under. Creighton is a team that is outside the top 50 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Very much a warp stat, though. A lot of this is due to the fact that Ryan Kalkbrenner, who has been the main big man for the team at 7'1", he's able to shoot threes, he's able to provide blocks, 15 points, 6.5 rebounds. He has been absolutely amazing for the team. He was out due to illness, and that really did warp their numbers, but I'm going to be willing to take the points with Princeton. Princeton is not the same three-point shooting team that they were a season ago, but something that does stand out to me, and once again, this statistic is a little bit warped, but with Creighton, they allow opponents to shoot 29.6% from three-point range when they are at home. In a road-slash-shoot-your-court environment, this does go to 36.5% from three-point range. Meanwhile, the Princeton defense has actually been better when they have been away from home rather than when they have been at home. The three-point shooting percentage, it travels relatively well. Opponents are shooting 32.1% from three on them at home. In a road-slash-shoot-your-court environment, it's more like 32.8%. So Relatively no change there, and it is a Princeton team that actually ranks in the top 25 nationally in terms of rebound rate. They don't have someone like a Ryan Kalkbrenner, but this Princeton team is allowing 3 points fewer per 100 possessions when they're in a roadside shooter court environment rather than when they are at home. And Princeton does have a guy with very good versatility in Tosin Avumin. He's been able to do an incredible job as a 6'8" point forward, 15 points, 6.3 boards, 4.8 assists, shoots only about 30% from 3-point range, but this guy's a stat sheet stuffer that has done a nice job of being able to take care of the ball. Combined 8 turnovers in the last 4 games. Princeton overall, 12.5 turnovers. They're not necessarily a team that plays up-tempo. They're outside the top 200 in terms of total possessions per game. Creighton is a relatively mid-tempo team themselves. Matt Aloko, he's able to go Aloko with giving you 11 points. He shoots more like 38.5% from 3-point range. And some of these guys that weren't necessarily firing all cylinders towards the beginning part of the season, they've been able to really step up here in the tournament. Someone like Keyshawn Kelman has been someone that I've been taking a look at. He's given the team 4-plus rebounds in each of the last 5 games. He's been able to provide 5 blocks in the last 4 contests. Not necessarily too much of a score between 7 and 8 points in 3 out of the team's last 4 games, but I like the way that he is performing for this team. Meanwhile, with Creighton, you just don't have a lot of depth. Fran Farabello's been able to come in off the bench. He's been able to give the team a few threes here in the NCAA tournament, and you do have Ryan Nemhard, who's doing a good job of taking care of the ball at the point guard spot. 12.5 points, 4.8 assists, and 2 turnovers per contest. Shoots 37.5% from 3. Baylor Shireman gives you 8 boards, 12.5 points. He shoots 35% from 3. And then you've got Trey Alexander giving you 13.5 points. Shoots the ball from 3 along with Arthur Kaluma and his 12 points and 6 rebounds per game. But it's a very top-heavy Creighton team. That is a little bit of an issue that I do have with them. And Creighton has been able to do a nice job with their offense. 72-plus points in 4 of the team's last 5 games. Defense has also been faltering a little bit as well. They've given up 70-plus points in 4 of their last 5 games. Meanwhile, Princeton has stepped up in a big way with their defense, giving up 70 or fewer in each of their last 5 games, with 2 of those games coming against a Penn team that was really, really good with their 3-point shooting and had the number 2 score in all of college basketball. I do think that Princeton is going to get this game played on their terms. I do think that Princeton is going to do a good job of holding Creighton to one-and-done opportunities, and I think that this is going to be a little bit more of a grimy game like we saw for Princeton in their first 2 rounds of the NCAA tournament. I made Creighton an 8-point favorite, so going to be one take down with Princeton. So I told 136.5. It's also diving under, and that will wrap things up for the Friday edition of Cusco Soup Sound, part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. A big thanks to Eli Hershkovich. He does great work over at the Lions and the Outside Shots Podcast. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Cusco Soups, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment, idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of 2 ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, @JNR_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter. As per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire on whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast. I have that 5-star review coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season. I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season 1 or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.